everybody. It's Libby DeLucian again here with the Libby DeLucian podcast. And I have a great friend, Bill. I'll let you introduce yourself. But me and Bill met at SAS Academy many years ago, a handful of years ago. And he actually worked with us, actually Paul, I think you remember Paul, my partner, and helped us price out WootRecruit. So if you don't like the price of WootRecruit, we can blame Bill. So I wanted to bring Bill on because he is a pricing expert. And I think whether you're pricing house cleaning, lawn care, or you have an idea to build a SaaS company, Bill can help us figure that out. So Bill, why don't you introduce yourself?
Thanks so much, Libby, for having me on the show. I come by pricing a little bit, you know, pricing is such a boring topic is what I hear all the time, right? So pricing is kind of boring, but I come from it from a background of technology. So I came up in the world as a software developer. So I built products for many, many years. And I founded my first company in 2007, which was a software company to help other people build software. So basically an outsourcing firm, but we specialized in doing mobile only. So we built mobile apps only for companies across North America usually. But during that time, I had to develop a productized service, right? Because selling by the hour, as we all know, kind of sucks, right? It's one of the worst ways we can price something, but sometimes that's the way it has to be. So that's what we were doing. We were pricing by the hour. And instead of doing that, we came up with a productized service for our entry-level offer, which we called the Mobile App Blueprint. And I stole a page from the SaaS playbook, which was doing a sort of a good, better, best model. So give people some choice, but control the guardrails and set the price to be a flat price. And so then it was up to us to get really efficient at delivering that thing. So that was my first sort of taste of like taking what we were doing, productizing it down, and then actually having to assign a price to it. And more importantly, though, it was kind of the structure that mattered more. And so at the time we were selling our services to a lot of B2B SaaS companies, and we were building their companion apps. And we used a little tool to actually share the pricing with them. And it was this sort of good, better, best pricing page, but it was built specifically for each client. So it was tailored to them, a couple of other add-ons, you know, all that kind of stuff. And over and over and over again, we kept hearing from people saying, hey, this is a really interesting tool. Where can I get it? And I said, well, we built it in-house, you know, sort of kicked my shoes, you know, oh, it's nothing. And my head of sales pushed and pushed and pushed and said, let's build a product out of this thing. And so we hatched a product. It was called SalesRight. We got some funding. We started a SaaS company. And within a couple of years, we were acquired by Fastspring out of Santa Barbara. And Fastspring is a merchant of record company focused on e-commerce software sales. And so they really liked what we were doing. And they were doing kind of a build versus buy decision at the time. And they decided they wanted to acquire us. And it was a really good move for us. So that's how I really dove deep into pricing, was in that time when I had to figure out all the B2B SaaS pricing models that were possible and code them up in our quoting tool. And you know, that's kind of how I came into pricing. And it's also how Libby and I met, because when I was trying to actually grow that company, I joined SaaS Academy, because up until then I had been reasonably successful running my businesses. I imagine many of you can relate to this, running your business and you take a new chapter and then all of a sudden things get a lot harder. So I ran into a few walls and then I joined SaaS Academy, met Libby, but that's where I started to really get exposed to a ton of other types of software companies, which were really, really fascinating. So I naturally just ended up talking to people about pricing. And so once the company got acquired, I sort of hung out with the SaaS Academy team and did a bunch of coaching for a lot of years. And so I've coached over 400 founders on pricing in general, whether it's value pricing or, you know, cost plus pricing, any of those types of models I've sort of been exposed to. Yeah, I don't know really where I'm going with this, but that's sort of my long-winded introduction about what I do and where I came from. I think like many of you probably listening, your journey is not what people would expect necessarily. I think that's kind of normal. And I always like highlighting that, because everybody arrives at where they are because of their past experience. And so if you would ask me when I was 20 years old, going through university, taking computer science, if I would ever be a pricing expert, I would have laughed. And so, you know, you never know where things are going to take you. And so you just got to follow the road and trust the process.
So I love that your story of kind of how you end up here. I think we all end up not thinking that, oh my gosh, we're going to own a SaaS company or a house cleaning company or lawn care company. You mentioned something in your good, better, best, right? Good, better, best. I see a lot of, especially in the residential cleaning and commercial cleaning space, a lot of people starting to price good, better, best. When that's not the traditional way to price a job, and I think it's one they're trying to give options right now because people are, you know, that perceived value. So can we put those bumpers? And, you know, how do we also upsell and create more value for our service? It's really popular. I see in commercial cleaning, and I'm seeing it come into residential, the good, better, best. And I just think it's really interesting to see how pricing a SaaS isn't really much different than pricing to me a home service company.
No, and it's not. And this is fascinating to me too. And I've had a few people say this to me over the last, I don't know, 8-9 months. They're like, can you help me price my services company? And I'm like, well, no, you know, and I usually just, you know, give advice for free at that point because they're not my target market. And I'll sit and have the conversation. But I realized recently, like you, we're seeing this over and over and over again and showing up. And I thought to myself, I said, well, you were doing it, you idiot. You were doing it back, you know, with your software company. You were still selling service and you were productizing it and you were selling it in a good, better, best fashion. And it is a really great model. So good, better, best, I think works in a lot of situations where not everybody needs everything you do. And if they do get everything that you have, they may feel a little bit like, well, I don't really need that. And all of a sudden it feels a little bit hard to pay for the thing. And that sounds kind of weird. Like we give people more things and we expect that's more value and therefore we'll charge more for it. But sometimes it feels like less value because I don't need it, you know? So yeah. I don't know what it would be in cleaning, but you know, if there's some kind of service that you offer that maybe, I don't know, maybe it's like Venetian blind cleaning and I don't have any Venetian blinds. It's like, well, why am I paying for you to do Venetian blind cleaning in this package when I don't have any Venetian blinds? I don't know if that's a thing, but that's throwing that out there.
Well, we always learn that we should price our service as a product, right? Package it together because that helps us get away from customization, just like in software, like you have the good, better, best so that there's very little or no customization needed. That's actually the same philosophy in cleaning, is to create the price it as a product, a thing, versus a service where it's more customizable and then that's not scalable. But if we're doing the good, better, best, then we can give the customer what they need with it. It's like you said, it still has those bumpers within those parameters. So they're not buying what they don't need.
Yeah. I mean, because if you think about the spectrum of those pricing models, right, you've got all the way at the other end, it's like all in one, you know, we just, here's our one package, we sell it, this is what you get. Right. And then on the other side of that, we have like an a la carte style of pricing where every single service is priced individually and you can just build your own menu of what you want, which can get really challenging for the business. So in the middle is good, better, best. And good, better, best is kind of preserves some of the a la carte-ness because they get to choose, and also includes some of the all in one because now you can package your services together that make sense. And it creates this, I don't want to call it an illusion of choice because it's not, it is still optionality, I like to call it. But when you are out there trying to sell a service and you walk in the door and you say, here's my quote for what you're going to do, they'll be like, great, thank you very much. I'm going to go get another quote and compare it. Right. I would much rather have the conversation be about not what are you going to buy from me or not, you know, are you going to buy from me, but what are you going to buy from me? And that way, because then if you have multiple packages you're comparing against, then the conversation comes down to, well, what is it you need? And then these are the options that we have. And then you can use the prices of those to help guide people to where you want them, right? So you'll have like a low end offering that just doesn't really feel like it gets the job done 100%. Maybe it might be good for some folks. And then you have a really high end offering, which is kind of anchoring the price at the highest end. And then you kind of have that middle option, which is the Goldilocks effect, you know, which is kind of like, this is just right. And for most people, if we're designing our good, better, best strategy correctly, then we're going to want most people in that middle package. Very few people sort of in the highest package, because it probably takes a lot more to actually service that. And then people in the lowest package is almost like, you know, potentially entry level, but some people could just live there forever if that's all they really, really need. But ideally, you want to sort of optimize for the thing that you're really good at, the thing you built all your profit margins into, and, you know, that one sort of package. So giving the guardrails on either side sort of forces that optionality and allows them just to compare you against you as opposed to you against a competitor.
I like
because
that.
Now if they
compare
have to, mm-hmm.
you against you, I never thought about it in that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think it also makes them feel like they're in control, as in they have options, which one you like versus like, here's what we have, take it or leave it.
Yeah. Or is it, yeah, what is it you need? And based on what you've told me you need, it sounds like this is the option for you. And you could even be, you know, and I think people respect that because you're not just trying to sell them everything you have, right? You're just trying to sell them what they need. And sometimes you'll find people that have very, very unique situations. And it comes up periodically, maybe 15, 20% of the time as you're going through these things, somebody has this very unique thing that they're willing to pay a lot of money for. That's a really good candidate for you to use as an upsell. So you still keep your good, better, best. Don't jam it into a package. But if somebody routinely needs, I don't know, give me a really, I don't know, in your world, what's something that you know, few people need, but the people who need it really, really need it, you know, like that kind of like a service that you would provide.
So it's not typically, you know, you could say, oh, well, plantation shutters, right? They got to be cleaned by hand. If they want it, they really want it. It's typically higher end homes. And it's really expensive because you have to do each panel by hand. And most people won't pay for that. Like, they just keep them closed so you can't see the dirt.
So then that becomes an add-on, right? The plantation shutter add-on, which you can command a premium for. And some people are going to see, oh, they do that. That's great. I have those. We'll do that once a year. That's fine. Or we'll do that every 3 months. So it just gives people that optionality without you having to devolve to any of those special requests being that you get frequently enough that, you know, you have a package for. It doesn't devolve down to just figuring out hourly or what it's going to be. That's the nice thing about Good, Better, Best as well, is it allows you to have, you know, those other pieces sort of be upsells on top of the package they buy. And I think this is normal stuff that you would do if you weren't doing Good, Better, Best, I suppose. If you were pricing everything as a product, you'd probably have a few upsells and a few add-ons that people could buy. But combine it with the optionality of Good, Better, Best, you really get them into a conversation about what's best for them. And they just stop. They don't necessarily stop, but they're cognitive. Here, this is what it is. When people invest mental energy in working with you to figure out what it is I need together, they want a return on that investment of time. Whether they know it or not, psychologically, they want a return on that investment. So they spent time with you sitting side by side, as opposed to across the table, figuring out what it is that we need. And from there, they're much more likely to continue that conversation and work with you because they want that return on investment. I like Libby. We sat down, we figured this out. This is exactly what I need. There's a trust level that starts to build if you show up with solutions as opposed to just trying to sell a product. And I think that's the difference. And I think Good, Better, Best helps with that because it gives you the optionality, it gives you something to talk about. You guys are now figuring it out together, and that loop will just compound.
So love this, because I think it's a lot of people are going this way, especially in a tight market where, you know, the perceived value, everyone has a different perception of value. We were talking about a topic before we started recording that I want to dive into. And it was the, you know, we see a lot of people wanting to build SaaS companies, or the thought of building a SaaS company that may be in home service, or they may have this knowledge. And Bill was talking about how we see the future of that when it comes to SaaS. And I was telling Bill, you know, I have people approach me often that they want to take that expertise in lawn care or cleaning or commercial cleaning and say, hey, I have this idea for a SaaS company. But I would like to get, Bill, some of your perspective on, you know, building the future of SaaS when it comes to being able to use your knowledge and your expertise to help kind of industry specific.
Yeah, I think I think we're kind of in like in a golden hour of this right now in some ways, because, you know, the AI has come a long, long way in helping us be able to get our thoughts into a format and into a process much, much faster than we ever have before. So if you combine the ability to create software, which has been democratized and democratized and democratized over time, and it's easier and easier than ever to create software, but generally it's not the creation of the software that's the problem, right? It's the what problem am I solving? And people who do vertical services, right? Very, very specific, unique services. I always talk about pool installers or people who do hardscaping, all that kind of stuff. You know, unique things that are underserved, but they have so much knowledge after years and years and years of doing this kind of work that they just understand it intrinsically. Now you can take that knowledge and get it into AI through various mechanisms, like, you know, teaching it everything you know, kind of training it with all your processes and your workflows and all the way that you do the work that has made you so valuable to your customers. You can now start to codify into software because AI has been made so accessible. And now you can get your brain, you know, Libby can get her brain into, you know, an LLM or at least some reasonable facsimile thereof to get some of the workflows done. And then combine that with the ability to create software so quickly these days that you can really bring those together and go pretty quickly. Because, you know, not only is the software, it's not often just about the software, right? Because building SaaS company traditionally is very, you know, a lot of them are very horizontal, right? Think about the ones we know, like Notion and HubSpot and all this kind of stuff. Very horizontal. They don't really care what niche they're servicing. But in services, we are automatically already super vertical, right? If we do HVAC, if we do plumbing, if we do, you know, pools, any of that stuff is very, very verticalized. And it can even get more verticalized. It's like I specialize in a particular type of pool. But when you take all of that knowledge, you need to, if you're trying to help other people do what you do, you're going to have to teach them, right? Because it's not just about the software. It's about the mech. It's about the process and the workflow and how you do it. And that, I think, is the magic. So you see companies a lot like yours, where you have education as a big, big component of what's actually happening, training people how to do this, providing the tools for them to do it and win, and then just an iterative cycle of continuing to do that. So I think most, like, I talk to people probably every, I'm in a coaching program where we meet every 3 months, and I probably talk to 3 or 4 people that are in vertical industries that are trying to build software. And every one of them has the exact same kinds of questions. It's like, you know, how do I build the software? How do I do the thing? I'm like, that's great. This is how, but how do you build the education? Because you can build that now. Like that is just a matter of time. You just need to sink the time into it and get some good people together, solve that problem. But really it's going to be like teaching people the process and how to sell and how to do the work is really, I think, the magic. And if you can build those things, they'll just create a crazy flywheel of growth.
So we have 2 SaaS companies that we've spun up, Woot Recruit being one and CellConvert Clean being another. And I love the point. I have people approach me all the time that they have an idea. They have the SaaS, they have the system. How can they use AI? How can they spin up, you know, SaaS is a popular topic. It's been for a few years now. But your point of education, I think, is really important that no one touches on. And I learned this the hard way with Woot Recruit. Is I was selling them my process, and my process works, but my process was different than theirs. So the software wasn't the only solution. I had to train them to think the way I thought. I had to train them that, hey, this is a different way of recruiting, but I just need you to try it before you bring in your old habits. Because if anyone in that vertical SaaS space is building out expertise and knowledge, you have to have some training behind it, because they actually have to change the way they do business for the software to be effective, which can cause some resistance or friction, and which can then lead to high churn. People don't like it. And we learned this in Woot Recruit. So we could get all the applicants someone would want to the door, but if they didn't continue that process, they felt like Woot Recruit failed. But in reality, they just needed a little bit of education for them to understand how to use it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a belief, right? It's a positioning exercise, really. You know, there's a reason that you're successful and other people are not as successful, for example. And I don't mean you, Libby, but like anyone who's building this and they want to do these things, there's a reason that you've unlocked something. And that's very valuable knowledge. And so you have to position yourself in the market saying, look, everybody, this is great. You guys are all doing it this way. That's fantastic. But I believe that there's a better way. And I believe it's this because of XYZ, you know, in the industry. So I'm going this way. And you position yourself in that way. If you want to do that, come along with me, right? Like, let's do this together. So you almost have to get people sort of understanding your position on the market, your point of view. And this is one of the most important things for any services company right now, is to have a point of view, because there's so many people out there doing it the same way. And so you need to have a unique point of view about how things are done, and you need to point that way. And if you can establish that in the industry as a leader, then people, the authority, then naturally people are going to want to follow you, and they're naturally going to fall into, you know, being more open to learn your process and your, but if you just sort of come up with software and you say, by the way, yeah, here's your onboarding, let's go, and you get in there and you go, they totally have to change the way they do it. They totally have to change the way they do dispatch. They have to totally change the way they do any of these. They're just like, no, I'm not doing this. Forget it. Right. So the get up and set up, right? The how long it takes you to get up and running with this thing is really, really important. So I always encourage people to start with the education, start with the authority, build the authority in your space, do those things, be the one on stage, be the one talking about this stuff. And then you have it'll be a much easier hill to climb. So.
No, we learned definitely, like everything you're saying, we went through that in Woot Recruit, and then we repositioned instead of trying to promote Woot Recruit as like the thing, the expert. We went to actually promoting me, because I could then share the stories, the struggles, the point of view from a person versus from a brand. And then I could do that free education online on social media, that then they were coming in the door already partly educated.
Yeah, they're already in your ecosystem. They already trust you. There's a level of trust. So like, people don't think people put enough emphasis on the trust piece. And I think it shows up more in vertical SaaS than it does in, say, horizontal SaaS, but still very, very important. So there's a couple of things as a SaaS company we can control to make ourselves really profitable, right? Customer acquisition costs. How much does it cost to get a customer in the door? And delivery cost. How much does it actually cost to get the result for our customer? And so those are really, really important things. So if I can have the lowest delivery cost and lowest customer acquisition cost than my competitors, then I can probably afford to spend a lot more money, you know, building out the product, you know, marketing it, advertising it, because I know that I've got a machine that really produces the work. But the other piece, the other moat that is missing there is trust, and especially with AI. because if I'm going to start leaning into AI, there's inherently a level of mistrust, or I don't trust it. You know, there's a doubt, level of doubt that is healthy. And I think the same thing happens with trying something new in those spaces. It's like, look, I've tried, people have sold me software before, like the automotive industry, right? They're constantly being sold software, real estate, constantly being sold software that's going to solve the next big thing. It's like, that's fine, but they're just going to come in, try it, can't get the result, they're going to bail. But if we can actually start to build trust early, either through the education or through some level of onboarding that involves really getting them to value VAST or like any of those kinds of, I'm not really articulating this well, but the trust element is probably one of the most underrated moats. And I think if you can nail that early and people start to trust you, they will just, the expectations that you already have the answer are pretty high. So therefore, if they're in the software, they're using it and they run into trouble, they're going to assume that, well, Libby solved this before. This must be the way to do it. I'm going to give it another shot. I'm going to keep pushing through, as opposed to if like, I don't think this is really going to work, and they get in there and they start doing it and it doesn't work. They're like, yeah, see, I told you so. So there's like expectation setting, because people have a funny way of living up to the expectations you set for them. And so if we can help people set really high expectations of us as, you know, thought leaders, and we know the way, they're going to, that trust starts to build much more quickly.
Yeah, I am. You know, really love this topic, because a lot of business owners, whether they're SaaS owners, I've seen this in SaaS Academy, or they're home service owners, they want to hide, right? They want to hide behind the brand. They don't want to show their face on, like, they don't want to speak, or they don't want to be on social media, or they don't want to do the teaching. And I think it's much harder for customers to get value, because there's no one behind it. I mean, why do we think Nike endorses Michael Jordan, right? We trust, there's a face, there's some trust built. But the other thing is, I think that when there's trust built and you do it openly and freely, they're much more forgiving when you mess up.
Yeah, 100%.
When, hey, it's a glitch, like, hey, there's sucks right now, it's not working. And you're like, oh my God. And they're much more forgiving when there is an issue, a tech issue, or even a user error issue. Because even when it's a user error issue, it's still my fault.
Mm-hmm.
Because we didn't train them properly or onboard them right or give them a walkthrough properly. They're much more forgiving when it's not just a brand, when there is a face, when there is trust built, when they know that, especially with this vertical SaaS, they know you're in the industry. You can so relate to their pain. I don't think anyone thinks of this, but when I was in SaaS Academy, so many people that built a SaaS for an industry that they knew nothing about struggled with, how do I translate that pain to promise? How do I translate what my actual ICP talks like, the words they use? And I didn't realize it for the longest time, is that I had a benefit. And so if you're using a vertical, like if you're building that vertical SaaS and you're that expert, you already have a huge advantage over some of your competitors, because you are in the industry. You know the pain, you know the verbiage, but it's also much easier to build the trust.
Absolutely.
Than some technical founder who has no idea about something but was really good at building code.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've had, when I used to run our mobile app design studio, we would get people all the time coming into us with an app idea. So this is back, you know, from 2010 through 2018, you know, people would show up and go, I've got a crazy app idea. And I would always entertain it, because I wanted to hear out the idea. Maybe it was amazing. Listen, it usually devolved into putting restaurants on a map, but we won't talk about that. Some people would come and say, I've got this really great idea. And it was a good idea. And I'd be like, this is fantastic. If we can bring our expertise, which is creating beautiful, amazing, highly rated, you know, mobile software, and we can bring your expertise as a domain expert in that field and put those together to create something new, that's fantastic. The problem was, is that sometimes people would show up with these amazing ideas and have zero experience in that domain. They ran into a problem. So the one I, this is the idea of before flyers, before there was like these really great flyer apps and stuff, you get the flyers every week, all this kind of stuff. This guy came along and he said, look, I would really love to take all the flyers and get them into a mobile app, and people could search for things and know what's coming up and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, that's a great idea. I was like, cool. So like, are you in the publishing industry? Are you like, how do you come by this sort of knowledge? She's like, oh no, I'm a massage therapist, right? Zero experience in the space. And I politely encouraged him to, one, either find someone who is a domain expert to bring alongside as you can do this. Because if you're just going at it as not knowing how that industry works, not knowing the publishers, not knowing how to get at that data, you know, any of those types of things, you're probably going to have a really, really hard time. But it's a good idea, but doesn't necessarily work. But in vertical SaaS, look, we've already got those ideas. We've already built a company. We've already built a company that's either respected or, you know, a going concern. Otherwise, you wouldn't be thinking about building a piece of software. I think people don't give themselves enough credit because they just think of it like a new, it's like a new thing. It's like, oh, I want to build software now. I don't know anything about building software. It's like, you don't have to know anything about building software necessarily. You just need to find the right people who do and combine your sort of expertise with them to create something, you know, brand new. And I think that's the, to your point, I think that's the thing. It's like, you got to have, you have the advantage. You just don't even see it sometimes because we're in it. We're in it all the time, right? We live it and we just think it's normal. The curse of the expert, right? Of course, this is how it's done. Of course, this is how we do plantation shutters. Of course, this is how we price it.
I love the curse of the expert. My husband gets mad at me because I underplay everything because I'm like, oh, it was my idea. It's not that great. Like it's, I'm not that special that I'm like, my ideas are phenomenal. And my husband's like, no, it's a great idea. And I'm like, no, it's okay.
I was going to say, if a good test of that is like, if you come up with an idea and it's useful for you, right. And you can actually, you know, put it into practice. A simple way to test that is just ask other people if it'd be useful for them. And if you can get one other person using it or, you know, adopting that, then it's probably a really good fucking idea.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know, with WooRecruit and even SellConvert Clean, we built just like simple prototypes and we asked our friends to use it like in the industry. Hey, can you try this out for me? Like, what do you think? Did it work for you? And that gives us like proof of concept. Like, yes, it works. Yes, somebody wants it. And then I think for WooRecruit, we then took us a year then to actually make it something scalable. I think my biggest issue was scalability. My idea was great for just me, but when you think of putting it on a SaaS or creating a SaaS product from it, how do I take something that just worked for me and create it at scale? And that's where my partner, Paul, my original partner, Paul was great at. Like he could take my concepts, my ideas and say, okay, let me try it in my company. It worked great. Now let's create it for scale. Mm-hmm. My question for you on this topic is, I love vertical SaaS. What do you think the benefit of versus vertical SaaS is versus, you know, versus something like Notion, like the more general SaaS companies?
One, building horizontal SaaS, you're kind of having to position and message to everyone. And so I often say, if you're positioning and messaging to everyone, you're probably not really positioning and messaging to anyone. Because it's like, I started my first company before it became a mobile design studio. It was kind of like our literal value proposition on our website, I think, was we solve today's challenging business problems with technology or some stupid thing like that. I mean, how much more generic can you get? So that's the problem, right? The horizontalness of it is the problem because it's such a hard market to break into. You're trying to service everybody. Everybody has this thing in their eyes like, oh, the market is this big. And if I can get just this 0.15% of it, I'm going to be a billionaire. Great. That's fantastic. But we're comparing ourselves to people that we're comparing ourselves to the ones that made it, right? We don't see the millions of them that didn't. And so the most important thing in vertical SaaS though, is that you already won. Like that's why I think it's so much better is that you know it so well, you have the domain expertise, you've been in it, you probably had some hard fought battles to get that experience. And you know that others could benefit from it because you see it every day and you work with other people and you see your industry, you know what's going on. So the advantage of the vertical SaaS is the fact that it's vertical. I don't know how else to say it. It's basically, it's so narrow that you don't have to think about all this other crap. You can just focus on your market and chances are they're underserved, right? Because everybody is using a horizontal tool for a vertical problem, right? They're building out workflows or different things and other pieces of tools, like whether it's like Go High Level or something else or HubSpot or whatever it is to manage their business, they're building out specializations inside those tools. But imagine if you had a tool that people already knew the specialization, it does exactly the way it works exactly the way you think and it handles the problems that your industry has out of the box. I think that's the beauty. And you can just focus all of your marketing and sales efforts just on that one group. And so I think the niching is the niching is how you win. Or the niching, I should say, for my American friends.
You know, the niching. I think one of the things to think about too, and I think a lot of business owners get sucked into this, is that the horizontal SaaS is cheaper. But it's so like misunderstood. Google Workspace is a great example. Google Workspace is for everyone, but no one can figure it out. There's no great wording or messaging to say like, how do I build Google Workspace? All of the components and facets of it versus if I go more vertical, it will be more expensive, but I will have expertise built into it already. And so a lot of business owners tend to go cheap but then get frustrated, like ClickUp, for an example. ClickUp is just like this blank canvas that you have to literally do everything, but it's for everybody. But business owners get frustrated because they don't have the time to build it out, versus if I went with a vertical SaaS, it might be a little bit more money, but I'm buying expertise and workflows, processes that are already built into it.
Yeah. You have a friend, she runs a really great coaching company, and she hired a team to build out ClickUp for her. And I think 6 months into it, it still wasn't really where it needed to be or what it was supposed to be. And, you know, she, you know, really lost faith in it. And I think, but if she had found a piece of software that was completely designed for the type of coaching that she does in her space, which is quite popular, she probably would have been a lot better off. And so, yes, it's a bit more expensive, but I think it's not really more expensive. So that's an interesting thing, right? You mentioned expensive. And so something is only as is expensive when it's compared to something else. Otherwise, it's just a price, because there's something in your brain you're comparing it to. And that's the shift we have to help people make when it comes to pricing, is that what are they actually comparing it to is probably not the right thing. So if you're comparing the cost of whatever vertical SaaS you have to Google Workspace, that's not the right conversation. It should be the conversation about like, how else would you actually get this done? And what is it going to take to really get it done in terms of vertical, like manpower and, you know, other things that go into actually getting there? Then the opportunity, then it's going to all of a sudden feel a lot less expensive, because we're no longer comparing it to the $8 a month you're paying for Google Workspace per user. You're comparing it to the $35 an hour you're having to pay that assistant to do that work.
I love this topic. This is one of my favorite topics. Like with our pricing tool, we can help cleaning companies price their jobs confidently, consistently, in seconds. And somebody goes, well, I can do the same thing using Zillow and a Google Sheet and something else. And I'm like, well, yeah, you can, but how long does that take you? Mm-hmm. Versus like the SaaS product starts at $39 for the month and you're paying someone $20 an hour to do it manually.
And not to mention the other cost that people don't think about is like, yeah, you can do it manually, but it does take you more time. And when you're spending that time or someone else is spending that time, how quickly is that? How many other quotes has that customer received in that time?
Oh yeah.
Right? Because there's also about timeliness, getting the information to people. So, and we all know this, like if you can act on a deal faster than the next person, you're in much better situation than they are, right? So if I can get a quote out or a price done very, very quickly, I have another client that does this kind of work and it's vertical service, and they figured out a way to price jobs, really complicated jobs, in seconds like you, but they can literally stand in someone's backyard and do the plan with them, draw on an iPad and have a price that is going to be within, you know, 5 or 10%, and their margin's going to be preserved, and they're going to be able to give them that price on the spot. No problem, you know, deliver them a quote right there. Whereas everybody else is going to have to go back and spend a week going and sourcing parts and figuring out what it's going to cost. And, you know, cause it's, you know, one of these expensive or one of these complicated builds, but they've figured it out because they've done it so many times that they figured out how to do this, and it's how they run their business today. So then they decide to go off and build software to do it for everybody else. So it's the same type of thing. It's like, what is the efficiency gain that you're going to get, not just in time, which is probably the biggest one, right? But also in opportunity flow and, you know, ability to service more customers and all those kinds of things, because you're on top of that, especially when it comes to something like a quoting tool or a pricing tool. If you can get something out there really confidently, really quickly, you're probably in a much better position than your competition.
Love this topic. So Bill, I've had you on for over 30 minutes. I want to respect your time. Love this topic. So like whether you're in SaaS space or in the service space and you need help with pricing, Bill is your guy. Bill, we'll make sure that we put all of your information in the show notes. But is there any specific way people can reach you?
Yeah, for sure. Easiest way is just find me on LinkedIn. And so I'm pretty much WDR Wilson on any platform. But if you search for Bill Wilson Pricing or Bill Wilson Pace Pricing, you're probably going to find me. Put the link, like you said, in the show notes. And if anybody is interested in more of this kind of stuff, I do post regularly on LinkedIn. I do post pricing page teardowns. You can sort of get my point of view on the market there. And if that's interesting to you, then I would love to have you show up and contribute to the conversation. So that's probably the best way.
I could go on for days talking about pricing and the value of like SaaS and software and how people like just the thought process around it. And your favorite statement to me, like of the whole thing, was probably it's expensive because you're comparing it to something else. And what are you comparing it to? And I never really thought about it that way. And you're 100% right. We're expensive because they're comparing it to us doing it manually, but they're not actually taking into consideration the cost of doing it manually. Whether it's recruiting or quoting or pricing that job, you're comparing it, you know, what are you comparing it to? So Love that phrase. I want to thank you so much for being on our podcast. And you guys, if you like this episode, please make sure to follow us, subscribe for more episodes like this. Again, this is the Libby Delusion podcast. Hope you guys have a great day.
Thanks, Libby. This is great.
Hiring sucks, right? Sorting through bad applications, ghosted interviews, and wasted time. It's all exhausting. That's why we built WooRecruit, the hiring system designed to attract and convert the right people for your business fast. What are some of the benefits? Well, you get more qualified applicants without lifting a single finger. Increase your show rate, eliminate the worry of ghosting. Track every single step of our process with real-time data. If you're tired of hiring headache, go to WooRecruit.com and let us start filling your open roles today.